Now it's time to be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist, Joey B. has researched grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. Man, do I have the coolest job. I travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. On today's show, it is the Ultimate Outdoor Experiences Part 22. And you go, what do you mean Part 22? Well, you know what? I've been speaking about some of these experiences. Well, today I'm going to get in depth in some of the things that I've done from starting when I was little Joey B all the way up through the current day today. Well, you see, growing up, family, farm, youth, I was, you know, it's funny because I was a farm boy. I was the early morning boy to the early morning guy now. I would just wake up, wanted to be out there. I would grab my rod and reel 4 a.m., 4:30 out the door. Bow and arrow, and by the way, bow and arrow, they basically gave animals exercise. That's really what I was at, but it didn't matter. I just needed to be out there because maybe I was tracking animals. And if I'm out there tracking, I'm watching, and I've used this story before, but it was like one of the cooler stories because if I saw an animal, my goal was to get as close as I possibly could to the animal, and we call that stalking. And no, it's not like human stalking. We stalk the same way that animals stalk. That is the Native American, and I'll get into quite a bit of the Native American culture today. Well, I saw a cardinal in a shrub, and it was a meadow rose to be exact, and I am now stalking the cardinal. And I'm getting closer. And while I'm stalking the cardinal, there's a fox who's also stalking the cardinal who's in front of me. So now I am stalking the fox who's stalking the cardinal. And to me, that's what nature was always all about. And to me, teaching outdoor education in schools, I mean, I would teach some tracking classes, some stalking classes, tracking and stalking classes. And I remember one time we were in a Great Swamp National Refuge, and I am teaching kids about turkeys, and we were out there tracking turkeys, and I'm showing them turkey scratchings and all this. And across the stream, there is a turkey, a tom, who takes off, flies across the river, and almost takes off the head of one of the students that came zipping by. And I was like, no. There you go. We were tracking animals, and you could see, and now all of a sudden you could see them. And I just heard a crackle in the mic, which I've never, ever heard before. I don't know if you ever heard that, so I apologize for your ears if it comes through in this show, because we're in the studio here. Never heard that crackle. And this show is brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or in one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. Well, one of my good friends, Jim Bruschak, he is a master tracker with Native American skills, and I've taken many courses with Jim on tracking and stalking animals, learned so much of the Native American way from him, and my professor, Dr. James Halfpenny, who is the number one author on tracking and stalking animals in the world, and I have actually had the ability of, and taken my niece there, to visit the education center, his education center in Gardner, Montana, and let me tell you, when you've learned from Dr. James Halfpenny, when you've learned from Jim Bruschak, that's in the Indakina Wilderness Center up in the Adirondack Mountains, you have learned what it's like to be out there and also the science behind, especially with Dr. James Halfpenny, the science behind what's going on with these animals. Well, in my wolf research, my tracking skills, they came very much into play because think about this. It is my job. I am on a tracking team. So if I am on a tracking team, I should be able to track animals. So I'm out there tracking wolves on a daily basis. And you know what? People say to me, what do you do for a living? And I'm going, well, my life's real tough. I get to track wolves every day. Pretty cool deal. And with the track pad analysis, and we would create these pads. And again, it was with the soil substrate, and we would actually rake them out and animals on game trails, because these track pads we'd create are on the game trails. And all the animals, they have already figured out what it's like to go from point A to point B, what's the easiest way. So through thousands of years, they follow the same game trails. So here I am raking out a track pad, come back morning or evening, and now I can not only see what animals were there, but I could tell by their gaits, etc. I could see the speed, the direction they're going, and the species. So as scientists, we record all of that. So little Joey growing up, tracking animals, and think about this. Some skill that I was just working on my own growing up then became more scientific. And then all of a sudden, I am putting it to scientific research use. And that was cool. Now, one of the ultimate outdoor experiences is also a skill. And I know I've chatted about this in a little bit in the past, but here's something for you. Map and compass versus the GPS, the satellite maps and things that we use. Because everyone wants to grab their phone and get out into the wild. And now you can download all the maps. Well, I'm going to let you know. So what happens if you are in the outdoors somewhere? So you're in the wild somewhere and you got this beautiful map on your phone and you're tracking and you're trying to figure out where I am GPS wise and all this. And all of a sudden your phone dies. Well, now there's trouble ahead. Well, I learned early in life, my backpacking with Dr. Bob, and I told you many stories about Dr. Bob, and we would purchase all the quadrangle maps. And if you don't know this, there are quadrangle maps for every place on Earth, and you can purchase versus longitude and latitude, and they all have names for the maps, and you can figure out exactly where you want to go and buy that quadrangle. And now you could even download, obviously, for your GPS units, for your phones. Well, I'm going to also say this. If you have it on your phone and you're in the middle of nowhere, USA, and your phone dies, you're in trouble. If you got the quadrangle map in your hand and your phone dies, you still have the quadrangle map in your hand. So let's go fast forward. And I don't know where that sound came from. But now to my grizzly bear research. I am in the top of the Rockies. We started at 8,000 feet, and many days we do climbs eventually up to 14,000 feet. Well, I could look at the map because I've got this big map instead of just the phone and see. And no, I am not against technology. I am a technological man. But here you go. I've got the map, and I just heard a little crackle again, and I think it's actually my headphones that are calling a crackle, so I will not touch the headphone wire at all, and I do apologize for that. Hey, somebody in the studio, get me a new set of headphones. Yeah, I gotta wait till after this show to get a new set of headphones. I promise I'll be good. Anyway, now here we go. With those maps, I can look at a mountain and look into the map, and I'm not just looking at a little piece of the map. I am looking at the whole map. And I could just keep turning around and I could figure out exactly where I am because I could see that mountain inside the map. And that to me becomes the most important piece of the puzzle. And learning how to read a map is actually looking at the mountains and looking at the map and finding that mountain because you're looking at the contour lines to figure out exactly where you are. And to me, that is part of the ultimate outdoor experience because if you can't figure out where you are, guess what? You're lost. We don't want to get lost. And for me, top of the Rockies, it's no joke. You're in Montana, and some of it was in Wyoming. And I'm not joking. It is a postcard in every direction. But that postcard in every direction, I could turn and see the mountains. I actually turned my head when I did that. You could turn and see the mountains, and you could see it in the map. And we would just follow the game trails that, once again, went along there. Now, going back to my wolf research, we were in wetlands. So we're in the thick brush and we're in swamps and bogs and fens and marshes. And I've actually did a show on wetlands. So you can go back to that one, but not now because you got to listen to this show so you can learn more. So you can go back to that show. But we're in those wetlands. And let me tell you, it was tough tracking every day because the wolves in that real, I'm saying, think about this. You got to put a shrub in your face right now. There you go. And move it and take two steps and you're in another shrub here. And the wolves, well, they can go underneath it. So tracking them every day was actually very, very tough. We would get lost every single day, and we wouldn't worry about lost. We were more interested in tracking the wolves to find out, again, I'm on a tracking team to find out what they were doing. Well, someone would pull out their phone and longitude and latitude. I would pull out my map and say, okay, we are here. And then I would actually pull out my map and compass, and I had my map out already, pull out my compass, and I'd say, okay, this is the exact way to get out of here. So you see, the ultimate outdoor experiences go along with map and compass because you can be in the most beautiful place in the world, but if you can't get out, you're lost. And we don't want to get lost. So I hear getting lost is not a good thing. So changing over to another outdoor experience, which is the ultimate, of course, is the Native American culture. And I absolutely, one of my favorite things is to be out west. And I'm going to throw a few states at you. How about Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, the southwest of Arizona, Utah, I love, and my favorite state of, drum roll, well, there's only one really big one, New Mexico. And the Native American people, as you get to spend time with them, they are so pleasant. They're just this, it sounds sillier, but they have this earthy feel to them. They just love who they are, their pride, it's who they are. They're helpful. They're genuinely courteous. They help you out in all situations. And with the, they're so proud of their heritage. And I'm going to let you know that you need to go to one of their powwows. And out in the East, I've been to some powwows that aren't real powwows. But when you go to the real powwows out in the Southwest, and you get to see some of the tribal dress and the tribal dances, and someone will describe to you what the dance means, and it's a description of what their past has been. It utterly spectacular. And if you also get the opportunity to go to the Pueblo, and there are many Pueblos out there in Taos, New Mexico, one of the greatest places to be to look at what culture was like thousands of years ago. And they are making day bread. No, the day bread is not thousands of years old. They are making day bread the same way that it was made thousands of years ago. And you could purchase some of it. And their language, which is Tiwa, think about this. It has never been written down. It has always been passed down. How cool is that? So their language is passed down from generation to generation. And I do remember, and I use a story about this, I do remember meeting a young gal about 13 years old at the time in the Taos Pueblo. And as we're walking through, and I'm chatting with her, and her name was Snowflake. How cool is that? And we were just chatting what it's like to be a young Native American woman growing up. And she was sharing some of her culture. Really, really just, I mean, there is so much beauty behind the culture of the Native Americans. And my good friend Jim Bruchak, who is a Abenaki Indian, he's also, besides that major tracker, is one of the top Native American storytellers and writers in the country. And Jim, his dad, Joe Bruchak, is the number one tracker and stalker of animals. I think about it. His father is the number one writer of Native American literature in the country. Well, I was at Jim Bruchak's wedding and listened to Jesse play his flute. Jesse's his brother, he's playing the Native American flute, while his dad is telling a story about how it's Fox's turn to go out and find a mate. Just some beautiful things. And you meet a Native American and he says, "I am Winding River." And you're just like, how cool is that? That is your real name. I mean, you may have the Americanized name of Joey B, but then say, "Oh, my name is Winding River." That is so neat. Now, with the Native American culture in the Southwest, gets passed along, some of it's from Mexico, is a Southwest cuisine. Hey, and let me tell you, I grew up in the Italian household and eating Italian foods, and I love them to this day. But when I can get some Southwest cuisine, and actually I make some pretty darn good Southwest cuisine myself, but I must say that, well, I'm going to let you know that that food is so good. And you need to go out there and just taste it. And as you go from restaurant to restaurant, and I'll just say the salsa, or you could say salsa, or the pico de gallo if you're a real culturist. And you can, every restaurant makes it homemade and it's different. The tortilla chips, homemade and different. And that's just a little piece of the puzzle. But that's just your starter that's there. And the artwork that's out there in Taos, in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. The Native American artwork. You go out there, you'll see some of the paintings. And I've seen one, I guess it was in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And the painting had to be 8 feet tall. And it was a full Native American in headdress. And spectacular. And some of the things are carved in bronze. Yeah, way more than I can afford. But you're looking at these things and it just gives you and depicts what it's like to be part in, you know, that Native American culture. In one of the places in New Mexico, I actually fly fished. We started at a glaciated lake at 10,000 feet because people forget that New Mexico is part of the Rocky Mountains. And what I always say about New Mexico, I can go from the desert to the mountains in 3 hours. So I could be standing in shorts and then be standing in snow, etc. Well, we fly fished going down, and that was one of the greater experiences there. So, moving along to the ultimate outdoor experiences, because I got so many to tell you about. How about unique ecosystems? So, back to the wolf research. I keep flipping that page back there. And here is one that I spoke about before. in some of my other shows, was the eutrophic lakes, and that was out in Minnesota. So let's talk about how they form. And you got to remember that. Now, first thing is, some of these lakes are glaciated, so they're like 500 feet deep, thousands feet deep, like super, super deep. And over thousands of years, the plants on the edge begin to grow out on top of the lake, on top of the lake. And now all of a sudden, you have a mat of plants that are growing out on the lake. And I am letting you know that it is thick enough to walk on. But if you were to break through, you would be gone. Let me tell you, you'd be in the dark abyss, and you'd be gone. And it is actually like walking on Jell-O. I really mean that when you're walking on it, because you could actually feel, you walk lightly and tread lightly, but you could feel the, I guess, the plant movements or the root systems moving on top of the water. But it is just a real, hey, the wolves, they can walk on top of it. And again, if we're tracking wolves on top of it, if they're going across, well, then we're going across. And I know I've told the canoe story before, but this is a worthwhile story because it's part of that unique ecosystem. Bunch of scientists, we're out there, we're tracking wolves, we're on a game trail, and I've got a canoe on my shoulders because anytime that I can get a workout, because I'm the fitness guru, I want to get a workout every single day. So if I'm out in the wild, just because I'm hiking, that's a part of the workout. But if I have to if somebody's got a portage canoe, put it on my shoulders, I'm going to carry it. So here I am carrying the canoe, and I'm walking along just looking at the feet of the scientist in front of me. And the scientist, one of them stops, they all stop. Well, a yellow jacket nest happened to be right below me, and they are now coming up, and they are stinging me. They're between, there's a little space, airspace between my backpack and my back, and they're just stinging me over and over and over. And I'm going, somebody help me, please, somebody help me. Well, it's like Charlie Brown's mother, and all they're hearing, because I have a canoe on my head, they're just hearing, wah, 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 wah. And somebody turns around, and they're going, like, oh my goodness, look, he's getting stung. I say, oh yeah, somebody please help me. And I can't just drop the canoe because it breaks a hole. I get dead. I hear getting dead's not a good thing. So they helped me get it off. And I got stung like 40, 50, 60 times. I have no idea. And you could have played connect the dots on my back. And they really didn't swell up very large. They really didn't hurt that much, believe it or not, for the amount of stings I had. But from that time, I was allergic to bee stings. So Joey B, yes, is allergic to bee stings. So, but it really, you know, I just share that story with you. But I'm saying on that eutrophic lake and everything out there in Minnesota, that is really one of the coolest places on Earth. So let's go to another cool place on Earth that is the ultimate outdoor experience. And growing up, I spent so much time in the Pine Barrens. My good buddy, Dr. Bob, their family's second house down towards the shore, living in the Pine Barrens. I'm saying there's only a few places on Earth, New Jersey, New York, New England, that really have Pine Barrens, which, sad to say, are getting, I'm always talking about protecting and preserving habitats, and that's like my ultimate goal as an environmental scientist, is to keep talking about it, and we are ripping apart them. But I am going to let you know that being in the Pine Barrens, from fishing as a kid growing up to the hikes and the trails and all that in the Pine Barrens, seeing the Pine Barrens tree frog, the pine snake. Hey, and I've held pine snakes. We've been on camera at Turtleback Zoo. I've held one of the pine snakes. Real, real cool, docile animal. There are carnivorous plants. No, it's not like the feed me carnivorous plants, but there are some, you know, sundews and pitcher plants, and just really unique out there. And you're looking because of the, it's almost like the water is a, it's not a root beer color, but this is a light brown color, and that's because of the tannic acid from the pines that are in there. You have all the pitch pines, and the pitch pines are cool because their pine cones are like the lodgepole pines out west, and they're serotonous cones. And all that simply means is the cones stay closed, because like if you have a white pine near your house and the pine cone falls down, it opens up, seeds come out. These pine cones, they stay closed until there is a forest fire. And after the forest fire is over and the ground cools, then they pop over open. And this is how they repopulate their area. So these are in areas where there are forest fires and can be the land, instead of being barren, can get repopulated. And that's just a really, really neat thing. Now, growing up, there's all brackish water in the Pine Barrens and the pickerel fishing. If you like to fight on fishing, it is one of the greatest places, ultralight rod and reel. I was actually down in the Pine Barrens because that is where a lot of Rutgers does their research with cranberry bogs, and it happens to be in the Pineys. And we were there, got there early for the filming, and I knew down the road was a lake, so I just said to the film crew, I go, hey, look, if we're here and we're early, we're going to be bringing rods, and I, because I always have rods wherever I go, and reels and the lures. And so I bring a bunch of perfect lures, perfect spinners for pickerel, and I am telling you, I don't think we wanted to go film that day because all we wanted to do was fish that day. We were on to some great pickerel. Again, there's some largemouths in there, and et cetera, but the pickerel fishing is great. But continue with unique ecosystems on this ultimate trip that I'm on today. How about in Idaho in the sagebrush steppe? And this is where I was doing my research on non-native plant species. So once again, you're up in the Rockies. And think about this. You're at 9,000 feet. And at 9,000 feet, it just levels off for about 60 miles. And it is a desert. So you people go, what do you mean a desert? Yeah, you're in a desert at 9,000 feet up. Go back to New Mexico. Yes. So a pretty, pretty neat thing. In that sagebrush steppe, my absolute favorite flower in the wild. I used to think it was Indian paintbrush, which it probably still is if I happen to be in Montana. But when I am in New Mexico, because you can find this flower. By the way, you can find this cactus from the East Coast to the West Coast and every state between. It's just amazing. It's a rabbit ear cactus. For you scientists out there, it's Opuntia compressa. And the flower of it, yellow, I am telling you, spectacular. And on a lot of my social media, because again, we happen to be on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, Flickr, all these different places. You name it, Snapchat. I have no idea because I have a social media gal. Her job is to put me out there and every day. Well, I have some photos of them out there, and you can find it somewhere. They are just some spectacular flowers of that. Now, also out there in the sagebrush steppe, how about the sage grouse? Makes sense. You're in the sage grouse. Got this little bluish tint to its wings. Now, we came across a flock of them and kicked them up one day. We didn't kick them up. They just flew up. And I have a great photo of them just taken. I had the camera in hand, which typically I always do everywhere I go, even as a scientist. I got a great photo of a flock of them taken off. Really, really cool. And out there, because, again, you're in a desert, and you can see the storms racing across, and you're looking at this massive, like, cumulonimbus cloud, just black wall coming at you, and you can see the rain coming down, and as the rain passes you, it just passes by. It is so warm as the raindrops are coming down, and they are huge, because you can see them coming down. They evaporate and go up. It's rare that every now and then one would hit you, like, almost right, I just hit the cord again. Sorry if you're hearing that little crackle. Get me a new headset here. They still told me I have to wait till we're done here. Well, now, in that Joey B's Outdoor Adventure theme song, and I know I've spoke about that a bit, because you see, one of my ultimate goals in life, my minor in college was music and guitar, my major instrument. Sad thing is, I've been playing less and less and less, but I have made a commitment to myself saying in the next couple weeks, I will pick it back up. Well, I got to play the guitar on the theme song. So I was one of the rhythm guitarists out there. I actually wrote the song with the good friends of mine, Shane, Tony. Well, it says on the theme song, every day is a new adventure. Well, you can download it for free. It's on Joey B TV, Joey B, JoeyBe.tv, where you can actually watch my episodes, but not yet because you need to listen to this one. You can follow me on Twitter at Joey B Outdoors. But not now because you need to listen. So every day could be a new adventure. Well, guess what? It is beautiful outside right now. I'm looking outside the studio windows. We have this glass enclosed booth that we're in up here. And it's time to pull out the kayak. So we have to go to the kayak station of Joey B Land. Get them, load them up. And I will be on the road looking for water, looking for my next ultimate outdoor experience. Until next time, enjoy life's adventures. You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybe.tv. That's joeybe.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free, and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures.